Jack Ryan Jr. would later wonder what exactly had saved his life that night. One thing was certain, it hadn't been skill. Maybe the heft of the bok choy had bought him a split second. Maybe the mud, but not skill. Dumb luck. Survival instinct. The supermercado was neither in his neighborhood nor near his frequent errand stops, but it did have the best selection of fruits and vegetables in Alexandria. So Ding Chavez had told him 8 months ago, but it had only recently, since his forced leave of absence from the campus, that he'd become a believer. Being unemployed had given him a lot to think about and plenty of time to broaden his horizons. The one frontier he'd so far refused to explore, despite his sister Sally's exhortations, was binge-watching Girls on HBO. That was his Rubicon. No crossing the river for the Roman legions, no chick TV for Jack Ryan. Soon, though, he'd have to make a decision about his loose ends lifestyle. Another couple weeks, and his probation would be over. Jerry Hendley would want an answer. Was he coming back to the campus, or were they parting company permanently? And do what? Jack thought. He'd spent most of his adult life working at the campus, a.k.a. Hendley Associates, first as an analyst and then as an operations officer. A field spook. The off-the-books counter-terror organization had been created by his father, President Jack Ryan, and had since its inception been overseen by former Senator Jerry Hendley. So far, they'd had a lot of success going after some of the world's big bads, while still managing to make a decent profit, not only for their clients, all of whom knew Hendley only as a financial arbitrage company, but also for the campus's covert operational budget. $17.50, the cashier told him. Jack handed her a 20, took his change, then collected his brown paper sack from the glum teenage bagger and headed for the door. It was just past 8 p.m. and the store was almost deserted. Through the broad front windows, he could see rain glittering in the glow of the parking lot's sodium vapor lights. Accompanied by a cold front, rain had been falling in Alexandria for 3 straight days. Creeks were swollen, and the DIY stores nearest the Potomac were seeing a jump in sandbag sales. Perfect weather for homemade slow cooker chili. He'd just put in a solid 8 miles on his gym's indoor track, followed by a 20-minute circuit of push-ups, pull-ups, and planks, and he hoped to turn his bag full of ground beef, beans, peppers, onions, tomatoes, and bok choy, his mom's most recent superfood recommendation, into a reward for all his sweat. The chili wouldn't be ready until tomorrow. Tonight, Chinese takeout leftovers. The automatic door slid open and Jack used his free hand to pull his sweatshirt's hood over his head. It was a short walk to his car, a black Chrysler 300 and the first sedan he'd owned in a long time, and then a 15-minute drive back to his condo at the Oronoco. The parking lot's surface was new and its fresh coat of asphalt shimmered black under the slick of rain. Moving at a half jog, feeling the chilled rain running down his chin and into his shirt, Jack covered the 30 yards to his car, which he'd parked trunk first against the guardrail. Old habits, he thought. Be ready to leave quickly. Know your closest exits and highways. Months of civilian life and still a lot of the fieldcraft rules John Clark and the rest had taught him hadn't faded. Did this tell Jack something? Was this just a shadow of a habit or inclination? As he neared his car, he saw a sheet of white paper stuck under his windshield wiper. A flyer, food drive, garage sale, voting reminder. Whatever it was, Jack wasn't in the mood. He leaned sideways and reached for the flyer. Sodden, it tore free in a clump, leaving a narrow strip trapped beneath the wiper blade. Shit, Jack muttered. From behind, a voice. Hey, man, give it up. Even before he turned, the tone of the man's voice, combined with the time of night and location, had touched off Jack's warning bells. The supermercado wasn't in the best of neighborhoods, with its fair share of crack-driven homelessness and petty crime. Jack turned on his heel while taking 2 steps backward, hoping to buy time and room to maneuver. The man was tall, nearly 6.5 feet, and gangly, his head covered in a dark hood, and he came from Jack's left at a fast walking pace. Overhead, lightning flashed, casting the man's face in stark shadow. Break his pattern, Jack thought. Having targeted his prey and committed himself to the attack, the man, a crackhead or tweaker, Jack guessed, was laser-focused, confident this role would go like all the others. Jack needed to change that.